Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
In other news, the Prime Minister of Sweden visited Washington today, and my tiny little nipples went to France.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You might have noticed I've got a slight weight problem.
No.
Yeah, I do. I went to this doctor. He told me I swallowed a lot of aggression along with a lot of pizzas.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I want to party with you,
cowboy. If the two of us together... Get it.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two, Dirt and Sprague. If you missed hour one, we talked a lot about the Michael Jordan Bulls series, and if you had to make love, what play-by-play announcer would you want to call your love-making ability? But we have a loaded second hour. We got NFL True or False coming up. But set to join us here in a second is the author of the book Roaring Back, The Fall and Rise of Tiger Woods, Kurt Sampson, and you can find it all over online, Amazon, bookstores, what have you. He joins us now. We're almost a year to the day.
Yeah, would have been celebrating the one-year anniversary.
So awesome. I'll always remember where I was for that. I was in the media room for Game 1, Blazers Thunder, watching Tiger Woods with probably 45 media members and all of us dead quiet waiting for him to seal it up, and everybody went ecstatic for it. And Kurt joins us now. Kurt, thanks for hopping on. Congratulations on the book. I want to start with where were you watching Tiger Woods win the Masters and make this comeback?
Usually I'm in Augusta for the Masters. Last year I was not, and unfortunately, and had to watch it at home, but I was glued to the tube like so many others for that drama, and thus the book. It seemed like such a unlikely, crazy, and popular win. It seemed like an occasion for some instant nostalgia in book form.
Yeah, well, it's amazing now that we can look back and it's kind of normal, and you wrote the book, it's he's won, and kind of that comeback has been capped off. But there was a lot of sports fans that felt like it was never going to happen, and you go back 2-3 years ago and even reference him winning another major. It seemed like this unthinkable thing. Where were you at on before this had happened, before you wrote the book, on Tiger and his comeback and his ability to win another major championship?
Well, I'd say 6 months before his win, I was with those who had said, Tiger, no way. Wasn't he a good player, past tense? But then in November of 18 in Atlanta, Tiger won the Tour Championship, which was seemed to be out of nowhere for those of us who weren't aware of how effectively he'd rehabbed his back and his psyche after various traumas he endured. And that just gave an edge, I think, to the 2019 Masters that Tiger had won and could win again, really fueled the whole thing and just ratcheted up the drama even more.
Yeah, this is author Kurt Sampson, the book Roaring Back, The Fall and Rise of Tiger Woods. Look, I think a lot of us know about the fall. It was maybe one of the biggest sports stories of my lifetime when he really just came down from the top of the mantle of one of the sports icons to what he eventually went through for so long. Is there something that writing this book, we had heard so many different stories of the terrible or negative things that he had done. Was there something that surprised you in discovering when you wrote about the fall of it?
you know, I was surprised how global the opinions were of those who dealt closely with Tiger over the years. He really was, how do I put this somewhat kindly, he was not a people person. He didn't really get kindness or empathy or some of the basics of interaction that most of us take for granted. He was so purposeful. He's raised as to define himself as a golf champion and nothing else. So kindness, politeness, some of the basics kind of escaped him. But it seems that along with the renaissance in his golf game, he's matured finally. He seems to be enjoying life. He seems at the moment to be a much happier camper than he had been. And that just raised his appeal even further.
Yeah. And I'm curious, what was it that made you, I don't know how often you're around him and stuff, but I've always felt that way just from looking at it from afar. He seems to have changed his personality. And sometimes you just have to be humbled in order to do so. And it's understandable why he had such a big ego and was so driven before all of this stuff happened. Yeah. But just kind of what are the stuff that you notice just from him personality wise that have changed since all of this?
The reasons are a bit mysterious, but we can make educated guesses, I suppose. His growing family, his two kids, he's, by all reports, a doting father. That alone could be the impetus for him to start taking a longer view of himself, maybe having some sensitivity as to how he was affecting other people in his orbit. If you have kids, you know they can change you quite a bit. Possibly that's what happened with Tiger. But through it all, he never lost this bulletproof confidence, this absolute self-identity, if that's a word. That's maybe a tortured compound noun, but he always thought of himself as a golf champion, no matter what, no matter what setbacks he had. He never gave up on himself.
Well, and this isn't to make an excuse for the way maybe he acted before everything came crashing down, because I think what you describe is what many people kind of felt from afar, right? He's just a robotic, lethal golf killer on the course, and he's scripted in almost every manner, commercials, what he says in front of media, etc. And then you get humbled like this. Obviously, his dad did wonders of creating such an amazing golfer and pro athlete. And you talk about the mental toughness when he's on the course. Is it fair to kind of run with the assumption, even though we're not clinical psychologists, is it fair to maybe run with the assumption that after this all came crashing down, he had to kind of learn what it was to be an adult, to be a human being, given how he was raised in this, you're a golfer and you got to win majors in almost a robotic fashion?
You know, I would love to know that answer, the answer to that. That's a very good question. I'd like to get it from Tiger's lips. And while Tiger has lately said, actually in the wake of him learning that my book was coming out, he has threatened to write his second autobiography. But the truth is, self-analysis is not Tiger's strong suit. It's a good idea for us to speculate about him. He doesn't speculate very well about himself. Eventually he'll let us inside. I don't see it happening anytime soon. But he's a complicated, interesting kettle of fish. This is my second book about Tiger. The guy fascinates me.
Yeah, he's what he means to the game of golf is also incredible. And there's a lot of folks that get roped into watching the sport when he's involved and he's around. How do you begin to put into words just what that meant last year for the sport as a whole of him being back and winning another major?
Oh, it rejuvenated things. I'd say reignited interest in the sport. It never goes away. It's such a good game and a participant sport, moreover. Mm-hmm. But Tiger is the one guy who really moves the needle, and he has since he burst on the scene a couple of decades ago. It's no coincidence that the total prize money on the PGA Tour has gone up a lot during the Tiger era. And I don't think his fellow competitors on the tour aren't grateful. So going to a tour event and asking questions about Tiger in hopes of finding a discouraging word is a fool's errand. To a man, the other guys love Tiger.
Yeah, Kurt Sampson is our guest. He wrote the book Roaring Back, The Fall and Rise of Tiger Woods. Tiger obviously winning the Masters last year to get that illustrious major championship he hadn't had in so long. Look, there's a lot of people that age-wise, they were raised with, you know, a dad, an uncle, an adult figure in their life where the adult figure was a big Tiger fan, but they were kind of maybe too young to really understand it. And then when they got of age, Tiger was this broken down, belittled individual who didn't treat women properly and kind of fell out of the spotlight in a positive way. And then he comes roaring back. In a sense, do you feel, Kurt, you said you've written two books about him now, you cover the sport. Do you feel like maybe something like rising out of the fall and winning a major championship maybe built a bigger fan base for him through all of this?
Oh, I think so. I've talked to umpteen people, a lot of them in Augusta, where Tiger has had so much success. You can picture in your mind, possibly a prototype of an Augusta National member. I've talked to a number of them who had sort of begrudging respect and admiration for Tiger because he'd done so well in his tournament. But now, what with his embrace of his family, just a generally easier manner, they've come all the way around and they just like him not only like him, but they admire the guy now.
Yeah.
There were some on the fence fans who are now all on board for good old Tiger.
Well, it's hard to predict where his career goes because, as we just kind of alluded to, 4 or 5 years ago, not many people saw him getting back to this point, and now he is back and came close to winning a couple other majors. But I'll ask you, just where do you mean he's getting up there in age? It sounds like he's been dealing with some back issues again this year. Just kind of where do you see his career going from here?
I think there's the model for Tiger's career going forward presented to us by Ben Hogan 50 years ago. 60 years ago, I suppose. Hogan, the great champion of the 1950s, after his car and Greyhound bus crash, a head-on collision, after that, Ben Hogan played 5 to 8 tournaments a year. 5 to 8 was as much as his body could take and the most he could perform in at a high level. And he did perform at a high level with that abbreviated schedule. I think that's it for Tiger going forward as he eases into a career in golf course design eventually. Mm-hmm. I think as a competitor, it's going to be like a sighting, a very big deal when Tiger tees it up. In other words, the majors and a few more. That's in my somewhat informed opinion, I think that's what Tiger's gonna do, how he's gonna run his operation going forward.
Do you know if Tiger likes you? And do you think he is the greatest golfer of all time if he doesn't tie or beat Jack Nicklaus' record?
If Tiger likes me, I don't know. I think I'm probably a part of an amorphous mass of people who write about Tiger or comment on him that he would probably have no use for, but you know, I would like to have had his input a lot on this book and on the other, but he simply won't talk to me. He won't talk to almost anyone. I can think of two, possibly three people in the media he will have a chat with other than in a group interview. He'll have a conversation with Doug Ferguson, the AP golf writer, and with David Faherty. Beyond that, the rest of us are left guessing and speculating, and we have to make do with that.
Do you think he's the greatest golfer of all time, even if he doesn't tie the record or beat it?
He's definitely the greatest of his era of all time. Boy, that, you know, we really need to have some beer bottles between us to settle that, score.
Yeah. Bring them to Portland. We got nothing but time right now.
Yeah, me too. yeah, I mean, you can have Nicklaus. You, Brandon, can have Bobby Jones. I'll take Tiger. We can mix and match. Greatest of all time. I don't know. It's a fun debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a theory that I think he golfs till probably in his 50s, gets to a point where he just can't even do it anymore. And I might be way off on this because nobody really knows. I think he is going to go down as one of the greatest sports commentators of all time at some point. I think he is going to be great for the game. Yeah, I do.
Interesting.
I think he'll be Tony Romo-esque.
Somebody, you know, that's interesting. I think it was Verdi who said to me that, or maybe it was Jerry Tardy, the editor of Golf Digest, who was doing something or other with Tiger, and he said he was amazingly spontaneous and quick.
Mm-hmm.
I had never thought of him being a great commentator, but boy, the guy's surprised us all a few times, so maybe so.
Well, Kurt, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Again, congratulations on the book. I know it came out in October, but congratulations on all the success you've had with this book. Thank you for hopping on with us. Roaring Back, The Fall and Rise of Tiger Woods. Kurt Sampson, our guest, the author of it, second book on Tiger Woods. And Kurt, maybe when the quarantine's over and you make your way out to the Pacific Northwest, we'll have the beers ready for you and we can get hammered and we can debate who the greatest golfer is of all time.
Hey, don't forget that offer because I may well take you up on it.
Absolutely. We're ready to talk Tiger King and Tiger Woods. All right.
Deal.
All right. There we go. Kurt Sampson, author of the book Roaring Back, The Fall and Rise of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, it's almost a year ago.
Online now.
Almost a year ago, man. I think you can argue that the two of the most iconic sports moments of the last 2 years, 2018, when he won the Tour Championship and it was his first win in 5 years, and you weren't sure if he was ever going to win another tournament again. That scene of him in Atlanta and the fairway fielding up behind him, walking up and getting the win and crying afterwards, last tournament of the year, that's one I'll never forget at the end of September. And then, of course, the Masters. I mean, it was... You mentioned the day. It was the start of the Blazer OKC series. For Game of Thrones fans, it was episode one of the final season of Game of Thrones. But if you also remember, for the Masters last year, they had a really bad storm that came in on Sunday, and so they had to move up the tee times. And I want to say the group started going off at like 5 o'clock in the morning or something.
It was actually perfect for media going
for
to the Blazer game,
right?
Because it ended early enough.
It was an afternoon game, mm-hmm. So it was all done at like noon or something. But they had big storms coming in the evening. So I remember going to bed early Saturday night, all fired up because he was in the mix, waking up, watching golf all morning on Sunday. That's one of those sporting moments you'll never forget. We love redemption stories in America, and it's a pretty good redemption story.
We're always willing to give our greats a second chance.
Yep.
And I'm thinking about watching that moment where he hit the putt and just what it was to see him get that redemption. Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps right now remembering, because the Oklahoma City sideline broadcaster, I forget her name, we briefly met each other. She was pregnant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was 6 or 7 months. She was pretty close to stop working. And she was sitting next to me and Marcus. And we watched it along with so many other media members in the media room, which was tiny. The TV's like a 40-inch TV. When he hit the putt, the whole room erupted. Mm-hmm. And she went crazy. We went crazy. We were high-fiving. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody was like, hey, are you okay?
Are you okay?
Are you not going to go to labor here? And
she
was like,
watch that baby.
Thankfully, I don't think I'm at that point, but you never know.
Yeah.
It was insane. I'll never forget that moment.
What a great memory.
All right, we got a whole lot more to get to. NFL True or False at the bottom of the hour. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on The Fan. All right, Dirt and Sprague back. 121 on The Fan. We got NFL True or False coming up at the bottom of the hour. You know, we talked about the Bulls and Jordan a lot in the first hour, and I think to a certain extent, Tiger Woods kind of falls into this sometimes, right? Like playing the competition part of it. And it's really stupid. Like at the end of the day, Michael Jordan is the GOAT or one of the GOATs, depending on how you view basketball. And I don't want to argue about that. I just, for one, think the game is so different from so many different eras. There's not one overarching greatest of all time. I think so many players are worthy of having that title that I just put a category of like five players in it. But, you know, much like I was arguing against the competition to a certain extent during Jordan's run, that was the one thing people would say that were going against Tiger. Fair or not, they would say, well, the competition, look at the field back when Tiger was dominating. Yeah. Look at the field now. Look at the field when he was playing.
Well, the funny part is the field now he created, because he grew the game of golf unlike anybody in the last couple of generations. So it is expanded to this point where a lot of kids got into it. It's why you have such a great young crop of players. And, you know, on the Tiger analogy I'll make, though, you were asking about Jordan and the Bulls and people liking them and kind of being unique in that regard. It's drastically different because it's an individual sport as opposed to a team sport, but Tiger's really similar in that way. There are, of course, some out there that don't like him for whatever reason or rooted against him, but the vast majority of people in this country, when Tiger was playing on a Sunday in a major championship, you were watching A, and B, probably rooting for him.
They were pulling down,
right? I mean, it's NBA finals.
NBA Finals numbers.
And they haven't matched it since. And him coming back last year, it was huge, even though they had to move the start up. And it was kind of a weird one because of how early it happened in the day. And it wasn't in prime time on a Sunday like the final round at Augusta usually is. But I think they're very comparable, and for a number of different reasons. The way they both burst onto the scene and just kind of encapsulated everything, and just they roped all these fans in, and the commercials, the Nike support, they were just kind of unlike things that we had never seen before, and it really galvanized support, I think, across the country for both Michael Jordan in the 90s and then Tiger Woods in the early 2000s.
I was doing an internship in Seattle when the Tiger Woods stuff first came out in 2000, what would that have been, 9, early 2010, I can't remember, and I was doing grunt work, go get audio, go print this paper and bring it to the host, call a guest or whatever. And I remember it was crazy. The show I was working on, all they talked about all the time at that point was Tiger, because there was nothing major going on in sports. And this was the fall potentially of Tiger freaking Woods. And I remember I was talking with a couple people from promotions at the Seattle sports station, and they were just appalled. One gal was like, I can't believe this. I'm so disgusted. And I remember being young, naive, sure, stupid, right? My opinion's right. I remember going to her and going, you know, like basketball players have a girl in every city.
Yeah. This happens all over professional
sports,
right?
Football players cheat on their wives all the time. And you know what the answer was? Well, we don't hear about it. And if I don't hear about it, I'm not going to assume the worst. And I thought, well, that's kind of naive.
Yeah.
So, look, and that's not to say he didn't deserve to be humbled. He clearly did, right? He treated people like garbage. Yeah. He didn't. I really believe this. I just started a book about, and it's written, it's a bit of psychology, but it's basically about you kind of are what you're brought in, how you were raised, your environment, mm-hmm, people around you. And I think you can always rise to a better place than the people who may have before you not been as great. But there's a certain element. I subscribe to it. And I'm not a psychologist, so clearly you don't have to listen to anything I'm saying, but I almost wonder how his upbringing by his dad of just being a robotic golfer, and then you get to a point where you're better than everybody, you start getting everything you want, or mm-hmm, you could possibly want. Do you know how to function? Do you know how to be a regular human? I don't know if you do.
You don't.
So I also wondered, going through that, how much that helped humble him, and the DUI arrest he had a couple years ago where he thought he was in California and he was in Florida. He was so hammered on, pills and alcohol.
That mugshot went viral.
Yeah, and he's made fun of that. He's acknowledged how embarrassing that stuff is. There's some of that I subscribe to with him. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it okay. But learning how to be like everybody else, I think that's a big part for some people. Not everybody grows up that way.
Well, and we're all products of our environment. And I also, when the crash happened with Tiger and it all came crumbling down, some of the animosity towards him, like, it's understandable because he cheated on his wife. He's a bad person. Like, you get a lot of it. But also, I think it's very easy, and I've always argued this about Tiger, for those on the outside to look at him and say that you would never do that, or how could he ever do that, or what a terrible person, who could ever do those actions, when Like, it's so easy to say when you're on the outside looking in and you don't have women throwing them at you, themselves at you. You don't have millions of dollars. You don't have the power and the control that he has, the dominance, the ego that comes with being Tiger Woods. Like, there are so many people out there that if your life would have followed the Tiger Woods plan, you would have turned into probably the same exact person just because that's what happened.
The word no was not in his vocabulary.
It was never in his vocabulary. It's why celebrities are certain ways, right? I mean, it's just the way you become when you're that powerful and you're that dominant at what you do. And I think what has made Tiger much more relatable is that fall and understanding it's not even the embarrassing nature of what had happened, a 7-iron going through his back windshield. I think it was mainly also the realization that this could all be taken away. That this isn't forever. This isn't something that you can rely on just dominating a sport year in and year out and never losing. Mm-hmm. That all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, not only did you have your marriage and your personal life fall completely apart, but then your body fell apart and you didn't know if you were ever going to be able to play golf again. And to have that kind of coincide with his kids coming of age a little bit and spending time, almost perfectly time for him, of them being at that age where they were doing a lot together, I'm sure, behind the scenes. Like, I think all of that just kind of came together and he changed everything about himself. At least that's from the outside looking in what it appears to be. And it makes him a lot easier to root for. He seems to be more appreciative of the things that he has now in his life. And he is now, look, he hasn't had as good of a year this year. He did win the Zozo Championship in October. So he does have a win here, at least on this last handful of months. But I think it's easy to forget, too, not only did he win the Masters, but he came close the year previous to winning two other major championships. He had the lead on Sunday in the Open Championship, and Molinari ended up beating him. And then he went toe-to-toe with Brooks Koepka at the PGA Championship.
At Molinari, I remember that final round.
And he had the lead on, like, the 11th or 12th hole, and he had one. I think he hit a ball. I can't remember exactly what happened, but he had one bad hole, and Molinari was like a robot that just didn't make a bogey the entire week. And then Brooks Koepka was as dominant of a run as you've ever seen, and he lost to him at the PGA Championship. But he came close to winning both of those, and then he ended up winning the Masters. So he kind of all of a sudden resurged, and it was fun to watch, I think, for the sport and from a redemption story of a guy that clearly had everything taken away, understood its importance, and now seems to enjoy the moment a lot more.
His kids are now to the age where, like, the internet is easily accessible to find out everything about their dad that maybe they didn't have talks with. Do you think he'll get to a point where he's comfortable enough, or he just is always going to be guarded in this regard, where maybe he's a 60-year-old man, or maybe it's in 10 years from now when he's in his 50s, where he starts to, or he has a sit down or a tell-all pot, you know, some sort of walking us through all the demons?
I don't think he will.
You don't think he'll ever open up like that?
I don't think he want to, because by the time he's done, I don't think he would want to reopen those wounds.
I just wonder how many... I don't know. You can,
it'd be
you
great
can,
for viewers, and people would love it if he ever sat down and did one of those and it wasn't like a prepared speech like he's given a million times.
Right, but the impact that somebody like him opening up on stuff could have with so many other people that hide their skeletons or won't acknowledge stuff.
Yeah.
It's a big impact. It's a much bigger impact than I think they can understand.
Yeah.
But we're almost a year to the day.
God, it's going to miss. I'm going to go back.
April.
Yeah, tomorrow's April. We're 2 weeks away or whatever when the Masters would have been. I'm going to go back and watch. That's Sunday, that final round. People forget how good of a round that was, too. That he had to come from behind to win it, that you had Molinari in the lead, and then
Koepka came on his heels.
Koepka was right there. I think it was a three-way tie of guys that were a stroke behind him, that if he would have somehow missed that last putt or double bogeyed 18, you would have had a four-way playoff. Like, that was a crazy tournament in its own right, not to mention that Tiger Woods won it.
All right, we've got NFL True or False, crunch time just around the corner, our Hunters recap. We've got a whole lot more to get to. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more. NFL True or False is next.
Hey, welcome back. Game 133. We got to get to our bracketology. We're in the final four of the best sports movie villain of all time. You can go vote on those at Dirt and Sprague at 1080 The Fan. We'll do that coming up here. Let's do that at crunch time, shall we? Also, we got to get to Hunters Episode 8, the recap. A couple of our P1s finished it last night. They said the finale is going to need two segments, so now I'm all eager.
I was very upset with Episode 8, and also I came closer to crying in Episode 8 than I did Episode 7.
Did you really?
Yeah. I didn't actually cry because I'm kind of dead inside as a human being.
Okay, that's fair.
But I got close to having watery eyes.
Okay. Interesting, because Episode 6 is still the only one that's done it for me.
Oh, I meant 6 then, not 7.
Yeah. The scene with the kid when they get taken away and then he gets shot, that's the one that did it for me. Although 7 and 8, they had their moments. Made a run.
Eight was up there for me.
We still got all that to get to. Also, some college football news in the final hour. And, oh, we got the mail sack as well. So get your questions in. 553-05 is a fan text line. Look at that. Just remember.
Why do I always forget the mail sack?
Yeah, we just forget things, you know? Let's get to NFL True or False, though, every Tuesday at 1:30. What do we got today?
All right. We begin the NFL draft. Still slated to go on as scheduled, even though teams are unable to have in-person meetings and workouts with potential draft picks. True or false, Tua Tagovailoa will not be one of the first two quarterbacks taken in this year's draft.
This is false. I know Jordan Love, Todd McShay came out and said Jordan Love has the most upside of any quarterback, which...
Love and Jordan Love.
Okay. And then, Herbert could be a wild card with the size, the arm strength, the underrated athletic ability. But it's Burrow and Tua, and then everybody else. And I just can't foresee that happening. So whether Miami gets the number one pick over or not, and I don't think they will, because I think Cincinnati will not put themselves in a position to lose Joe Burrow. I still think Tua is going to get picked second of the quarterbacks.
I feel like the Miami move, too, might also... They've always reportedly loved Tua. And how much of that is a fear that he's not there at number five? That somebody else swoops up ahead of you to trade up for Washington or Detroit.
Would you draft him if you're Washington or Detroit?
I mean, they might, but you also have a team that could swoop up and trade up. What if the Chargers want him and they want to jump up for number six? Or what if Jacksonville wants a quarterback and they somehow trade a bunch of picks to move up? So maybe they're just trying to protect themselves in that regard. There are questions about Tua's health, but there's also huge questions about Jordan Love and Justin Herbert. So I'll say this is false.
This is false. I mean, Miami, who knows? They're in love with them. It's just a matter of if you're... How comfortable teams have become with his injury and rehab at this point, because I don't think anything's going to change between now and the draft. I don't know how much more new information you can actually get at this point to trust.
I think Washington's going to draft him.
If he's there.
There's a lot of mock drafts that happened.
They're three, right? Or are they two?
I think they're two.
They're two.
See, I think Cincinnati's taking Burrow, and I think Washington's going to pull a Rose in Arizona.
Which is part of the reason why...
You go get Kyle Allen. You let Kyle Allen beat out Haskins. It doesn't sound like they're big fans of Haskins. You let Kyle Allen be your proverbial 6-7 week quarterback. You suck.
God, it's crazy to give up on back-to-back first-round quarterbacks. But
I think this is me just spitballing and kind of throwing out a take. But, man, if he's healthy, it's... You don't want to miss if he becomes what people think he can become. You do not want to be that franchise. Yep.
Next, reports leaking out of the NFL League offices in New York. The plan is still to hold a full 16-game regular season schedule in 2020, even if it has to start later than scheduled. True or false, the 2020 NFL regular season will be comprised of fewer than 16 games.
I unfortunately think this is true. I would love to say false and be optimistic here.
How many games are you thinking?
12. I'll go out. That's as optimistic as I can get right now.
That's a pretty good season, 12 games.
You cut a month back, you move it around a little bit. Maybe you have to change the location of some games. Maybe some of them happen without fans. I saw their like VP of, they came out today saying, yeah, we're all good. This is going to happen. They still want to go abroad. They're still doing their London games. Like, give me a break.
Fauci came out yesterday and said he thinks this is hitting us again in the fall.
Yeah.
So I'm not so certain this is going to happen as confidently as they do.
Yeah, but I'll say true that the season will be compromised in some way, shape, or form.
I will say false. I think they're going to have a 16-game season if they have it, but I'm not convinced they will. They are clearly being... Maybe stubborn's not the right word, but somewhere in that category of they don't want to conclude that there's going to be no season. I think they want the optimistic approach, and that's great. I think we as sports fans need that. But what Fauci said yesterday, not having fans in attendance, I'm not even sure the CBA is going to stand, because Eric Reed's lawyer is actually filing a motion to revote because they added different language in the CBA after the vote. It's a tricky situation, and teams are starting to complain now about trades and how logistically this is going to work with the draft, because teams can't have guys in. I'm not sure this is going to happen how the NFL wants it. I'm more convinced they won't have a season than they change it. So I'll say this is false. If they do have a season, it will be 16 games.
This is false, but there will be a season. It will be 16 games. It may not start on time. But the NFL is a television show now first, and they own three different networks
for their
time slots, and those time slots will be available to them on whatever Sundays and other times that they want, no matter when the heck they start the season. They're going to have a full season. They don't want to give any money back at all. The players don't want to have to take a big pay cut with the salary cap. You all right in there?
What? I didn't remember Cleveland having a relief pitcher in 1997 in the World
Series.
Assenmaker?
Paul Assenmaker.
Yeah, and his name's not John Wiener, it's John Weiner. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's Paul Assenmaker.
No, it's Assenmaker.
No.
Yes, it is. Nobody's and his family's trying to say it's something different.
Quit being 12. All right.
Is his name John Wiener? Because he used to call himself, and then he changed it to Weiner. Yeah. Matt Weiner, remember him?
Not buying it.
He used to be Matt Wiener.
Yeah. What changed there, Matt?
There are growing reports the Dolphins attempting to put a trade package together to acquire the number one pick in the draft from the Bengals. True or false, a team other than the Bengals will make the first pick in the 2020 NFL draft?
I'm going to go with the Vince McMahon intro music. No chance. That's what you've got. No chance. Cincinnati's going to keep this. They're drafting Joe Burrow. Because if you trade out with the Chargers, the Dolphins... Is your boy going to be there? Is Washington not going to draft Burrow if he's there? Is Detroit not going to draft Joe Burrow if he's there? It's too risky. And I don't think Miami's given up four first-round picks. Here's
what I'll say. I agree with you that this is false. However, if I'm Cincinnati, I would definitely think about it. For a lot of different reasons. One, look at the history of quarterbacks at number one. It just isn't great. We went over that the other day. Oftentimes, number one picks turn into busts. And if you have a Miami that's willing to throw at you, don't forget how much draft capital that Miami has. You could load up on draft picks for the next 2 or 3 years. The reality also is that you're going to suck next year. So is Joe Burrow that much better than Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields?
I'm not a
and
coach.
Look, there's not
it
a guarantee that you end
to.
Up with one of the top picks, but if you play whoever the hell is on your roster and you trade out of maybe you trade out to number five, you don't want to take a guy there, you'd go with a defensive lineman instead. I think Joe Burrow is going to be good. I'm rooting for him. He's been a fun story. I'm just not sold that any of these guys are like the lock of the century, number one overall pick. So I think history shows us in the NFL that teams that load up on draft picks can end up benefiting from it in the long run. So I would think about it. I don't think they will because they're desperate for a QB. I'll say false, but they should think about it.
Yes, they should do it, but I don't think they will. So I'll say that is false. Finally, both Jameis Winston, Cam Newton remain available on the free agent market at quarterback. True or false, Winston will get signed to an NFL team before Newton this offseason.
True. I think he accepts a backup role.
I thought Arians was doing a cool thing. I mean, like Winston or not, Arians was calling some teams and just saying, look, if you take him, you're getting one of the hardest workers in the film room you could want. You know, he's driven to be a great quarterback. Obviously, he can't cut turnovers down, but...
He's driven to steal those crab legs, too.
Yeah, I'm not trying to vouch for the character, but I thought that was a good move by Arians. Yeah, I could see that happening. I really think like a team like Pittsburgh might roll the dice and say, if we need an insurance policy for Big Ben...
They'd be one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL.
At least that dude will get out there and sling it and not be afraid to throw it in tough situations. He can live with an interception. I'll say it's true. I like that question.
I think this is true as well. I think Winston and his agent are more likely to accept reality sooner than Cam Newton is. I think Cam Newton still believes he's an MVP level quarterback and deserves a certain amount of respect in the marketplace that isn't there and I don't think is going to be there.
Why shouldn't he though?
Huh?
Why shouldn't he think that?
I'm not saying he should or shouldn't. I'm just believe that's what he thinks should be out there.
Yeah, nobody's going to throw that kind of offer at him right now. I just don't see it happening.
Certainly not without having their own doctors and medical team
convince
front office that shoulder and the foot are okay and will allow him to possibly be the Super Bowl level quarterback again.
He is the prime example of a guy too that will probably, if I were him, I would wait it all out. Wait out to see what the season situation is. Are you having a training camp? And then does somebody go down? Like you could have a team that loses a starting quarterback a la Ryan Tannehill a couple of years ago in Miami, right? He goes down in training camp and you got to find a starter for a team that still thinks they can compete. And you get a call and you get that starting job. I just don't see the Chargers have Tyrod Taylor. Just like, where is there a starting job out there for him right now? Everybody's already made their moves and we've been over that. It's a tough part for him. So I wait it out. Wait till things get somewhat back to normal this summer. Doctors can get a look at you. And then somebody's bound to get hurt. Quarterbacks get hurt every year. And then you pounce on that opportunity.
The tough part, well, one, did you see he was working out? And boy, he's chiseled, man.
He's massive. Yeah.
He's been doing really good exercising. But I don't know if going to a situation where a quarterback gets hurt in the early or middle part of the year, I don't know if that's a benefit for him. Can you really succeed going to a playbook you don't know so last minute and then being thrust into a situation? Is that going to help you thrive to go get that big franchise quarterback deal maybe you're looking for from another? I don't know. You know, he could go to, I don't know, fill in the blank team, Detroit. Let's just throw Detroit out there. Stafford gets hurt week four. Detroit's desperate. Hey, Cam Newton, come in. Is he better off going to Detroit in a pinch situation and hoping that he can understand the playbook in time to be successful? Or is he better off if he doesn't get a gig sitting out for a while and just becoming that commodity where a team goes, damn, dude hasn't played contact football in a long time. He's got to be healthy now.
Could work that way.
Let's bring him in and allow him to study our playbook.
Yeah, there you go. NFL True or False every Tuesday at 1:30. Let's get to Bracketology, the best sports movie villain of all time. We'll shout out the matchups. You can vote at Thurton Sprague at 1080 The Fan, also at The Fan Text Line. Don't forget, we got to get to the mail sack coming up in the final hour. So fire off your questions, sports or non-sports related, and we'll get to them at 2:15. But the Bracketology is next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. To all their members, while they're temporarily closed, they want you to continue working out, so don't sweat it. Over 100 free workouts available on their Crunch Line platform, which is free to all Crunch members. Just log in, crunchlive.com, and you can use it on your phone, TV, or tablet.
Shout out everybody I've seen going out for walks and runs. It hasn't been a ton of people because of the social distancing, but
you gotta stay fit, man.
I see the people running, and I'm always wanting to, like, honk and
give them a honk. Way to go!
My little brother's reaching the point of quarantine where he's like, I don't even know how to work out anymore. I'm like, what do you mean?
He can figure it out.
I can't leave. I can't go to the gym. He's a member at this. There's a rock gym over here. Mm. I can't go anywhere. I'm like, dude, look up Herschel Walker and then stop complaining.
Yeah.
He had no idea. He doesn't like sports. He looks up Herschel Walker. I'm like, that guy got ripped just doing 1,000 sit-ups and like 500 push-ups every day because he grew up with nothing else to do.
Every half hour, do 20 push-ups. There you go. There's your workout.
Yeah.
20 sit-ups. go walk around the block. Boom. Cardio, strength training. You're good to go.
You can do a ton of workouts without having to go to the gym or needing weight.
Yeah, you figure it out, man. Okay, let's get to these. So far, there is a massive blot, and I'm happy about this. The other one a little bit closer. We'll start, though, with the 1-4 matchup. The number one overall seed in the bracket advancing to the Final Four, Ivan Drago.
I must break you.
The easiest acting role that guy's ever had in his life.
How many lines did he have in that entire movie?
About as many as Keanu and John Wick.
You gotta be about right. I'd say Keanu probably had more lines.
The best part of his acting in that movie is the fact that he got so ripped.
Yeah, he totally took steroids too. I was rewatching that the other day, that scene where he's training, and they totally show like needles poking him all over the place.
Yeah, he's a robot. He's like a human robot.
He's taking on the number 4 seed, White Goodman.
Here at Globo Gym, we understand that ugliness and fatness are genetic disorders, much like baldness or necrophilia. And it's only your fault if you don't hate yourself enough to do something about it. And that's where we come in.
God, he's such a good character.
He's going to go down as the most underrated comedic actor of all time.
Yeah. He's got a lot of great roles.
His writing and his roles are so, so good.
Ivan Drago, number 1 seed versus White Goodman, number 4. Where are we voting, gentlemen?
I'm going with the guy that you actually hear in the movie. I'm going with White Goodman. Yeah. I enjoy seeing him more. And yeah, Ivan Drago, it's a great movie. You know, redeeming the Apollo Creed murder. Yeah. Give me White Goodman any day.
Oh, yeah, White Goodman. Much better villain. I mean, yeah. Drago, as you said, he's robotic. It's almost like he's a lab creation and more in an amalgamism or an amalgamation of everything that the Soviet Union represented rather than just being Clubber Lang, I think, was a much more...
I agree with you. I think Clubber Lang was the better villain of the Rocky movies.
Easily.
Because it was personal.
And it was... Yeah, the
Drago,
villain...
it's not personal. It didn't matter that it was Rocky or
anybody else.
It
was the Cold War.
Yeah.
It was the Soviet Union was the villain. He wasn't the villain.
He just was the face of the Soviets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was... Like, he was pushed to become the villain. He wasn't the actual guy. And we talked about it the other day when we voted against him in the first matchup as, like, a 16 seed. He snaps at the end. And he, like, shoves the official out because they're telling him to fight harder. Like, he finally breaks at the end of it. The Soviet Union was the villain, and I'm upset right now. 65 to 35%.
Really? Oh,
Ivan Drago is blowing out White Goodman, and this is a shame, listeners. Come
we
on.
Romanticize every Rocky movie as we if do. They're all the same as the very first one, and it's pretty ridiculous to a certain regard. But
I'm with you on that.
Let me ask you this. Been a lot of improbabilities. It is a movie, right? So I'm suspending belief.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to not suspend belief, where does that stack of no chance in literally hell Sylvester Stallone would have ever beaten Ivan Drago?
Yeah, it's pretty up there.
Come on, man.
It's pretty up there.
That dude was destroying punching bags and he punches Rocky and nothing happens.
Yeah, he just keeps getting up over and over and over again.
He killed Apollo Creed, but Sylvester Stallone...
He's just fine. He's just a guy from Philly, man.
All 5'7" of him. Like, come on.
Yeah, that's Rocky had that trend early on where he would lose fights. And the end of the movie, you wouldn't have that happy ending at the end all the time. And then you get to number four. He beats Ivan Drago. It's like, oh, okay, here we go.
Is White Goodman really going to lose this?
And right now he's losing. People got to go vote. At Thurton Sprague, at 1080 The Fan. Go log on to Twitter and vote, man.
Yeah, but all the non-Twitter people are like, well, it's a stupid vote, but I'm not on Twitter.
Yeah, you can text him in too. We'll tabulate him, 55305. White Goodman is fantastic. He's a great villain, and he's easy to root against. He is the villain of that movie. He gets all three of our votes. The second one, and Rocky, the common theme in the final four, but we'll start with the opponent. Number two seed, Shooter McGavin.
You're in big trouble, though, pal. I eat pieces of like you for breakfast.
You eat pieces of for breakfast?
No.
No. And he's taking on the sixth seed, the upset so far of the tournament, Clubber Lang.
Hey, fool, you ready for another beating? Should have never came back.
See, much better villain than Ivan Drago.
Now, is it going to get you to vote against Shooter McGavin, though?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No, but it's a pretty close. It's a lot closer than the last matchup.
This one right now is 84.2% to 15.8% Shooter McGavin.
I mean, how many villains wear cardigans? He's fantastic.
He's just mopping the floor with Clubber Lang right now. And I would argue that Clubber Lang shouldn't even be here because Bud Kilmer should have beat Clubber Lang in the Elite Eight.
Yes.
That's a whole nother thing.
Should we have matched up White with Clubber Lang and... Ivan Drago.
You gotta follow the brackets. You gotta follow the seedings.
That's
how it
works. When number one ranked Carolina goes out in the second round, or number one ranked Kansas goes out in the second round.
Don't get me started. When Oregon made the Final Four, they didn't get to play South Carolina like Gonzaga did. They had to play North Carolina. Yeah, how was it nice playing that? Like, what was South Carolina that year?
Seed.
A 7 seed in the Final Four. How nice was that?
Wow.
Yeah, people don't forget.
Shots fired.
Wow.
Shots fired. Gonzaga fans hate you.
That's all right. I like beefing with Gonzaga fans.
Well, they only have basketball, so.
That's all they got, you know.
Do they even play other sports?
I don't know. That's a good question. Gonzaga fan, let us know, 55305. So we're all going with Shooter McGavin?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Close one, but yeah, I'm going with Shooter. Mr. T is an underrated actor. Good personality.
Is he? Well. Is he an underrated actor?
Okay, maybe not underrated actor, but I enjoy having his personality and some stuff. Yeah.
You pity the fool?
Yeah.
Okay. Looks like Shooter McGavin and Ivan Drago will be taking on each other in the championship, but you have time to go vote. We'll update the answers at the end of the show.
I actually didn't think Rampage Jackson was all that bad as Mr. T in the... what am I blanking for?
Is it like the Expendables? Or
No.
The A-Team?
The A-Team, yeah. I didn't think he was that bad, but... I would have been okay if they said, hey, Mr. T, we know you're a little older. you're balding a little bit.
Why don't you bring it back, huh?
But just act like you're 30 years younger and we'll digitalize some of these things. I'd have been okay with that too.
Let's revitalize that career, shall we? So go vote at Dirt and Sprague at 1080 The Fan, also 55305 as we get to the championship in our best sports movie villain of all time. And we'll start to look ahead to the next bracket. We'll kind of pique the interest of what people want to do. We're steamrolling through all these. We've got a lot of different ideas. They're doing a fun one up in Seattle. I almost want a copy. We'll talk about that, though, coming up in the final hour of the show. We also get to have to get to the mail sacks to get your questions in before 2:15, and we'll answer them, sports or non-sports. We'll get to them all. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. They're temporarily closed, but they want you to continue working out on their Crunch Live platform. It is free to use for members. If you don't have your login yet, visit members.crunch.com/members/signup to get started. Know that they care about you and they look forward to seeing you as soon as the gym opens up. Again, the mail sack in the final hour, poll questions, college football news, playing the NFL season in the middle of nowhere. We'll get to that and pontificate if that would actually work. Also, Hunters, episode 8 recap. It's going to be loaded. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.